Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's program. I'm Tracy McClure. Coming up today, over the next half hour, the environment and global warming, the focus of the just-awarded Nobel Peace Prize. The effects of poverty and the environment, a Kamboni missionary tells us his first-hand account working among street children in Nairobi. And Christians in the Holy Land are still reeling from the murder of a Christian bookshop owner in Gaza. The Nobel Peace Prize was jointly awarded Friday to former U.S. Vice President Al Gore and the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change for their efforts to raise awareness about the urgent need to intervene to slow global warming. The panel is credited with forging a global consensus, blaming mankind's activities for climate change. Well, the Nobel Committee said Al Gore, who has lectured extensively on the threat of global warming and produced the Oscar-winning documentary film An Inconvenient Truth, is probably the single individual who has done most to create greater worldwide understanding of the measures that need to be adopted. But Monsignor James Reinert of the Pontifical Council for Justice and Peace expressed surprise over this year's award. He spoke to Susie Hodges.
I guess my first reaction is surprise, but then once you give it some thought, it seems like this is the direction that the committee was going to go. It seems that this is the hot issue right now. Unfortunately, there are so many other things going on in the world, and it, for me, in a way, it not tarnishes, but I think it takes away from the prize, from the real spirit of what the Nobel Peace Prize means to me and probably means to a lot of other people.
When you say it tarnishes, in a way, the award, is this because you see this as a too much of a political choice?
I'm not sure if I'm looking at it as a political choice, a move in that direction. But what I do see is, if you look back on the last several years, 10 years maybe, and see some of the people who have received the award, and I have to say that there's a precedence for this. The lady 3 years ago from Kenya who won the award was working for the environment, protection of the environment for her village, for her town, for her people. But at the same time, I see her working on the ground. She was in the community. She was working, doing something concrete. And now, just in the last few days, we've had all of the news coming out of Myanmar, out of Burma, and how many people there have been working tirelessly for so many years on trying to bring some stability and peace and bring the recognition of human rights into their country, back into their country. I see the awarding now, the 2007 award, is as really taking away from the work of people who are really truly working for making people's lives better, for the promotion of human rights, for the recognition of human dignity.
There is, however, a precedent in a way, because there was the former U.S. President Jimmy Carter who was awarded the prize in 2002. And as you say, sometimes it does seem to be activists, grassroots activists on the ground, but other times it is, key political leaders.
Most certainly. Kofi Annan, the United Nations, won the award in 2001. We can go look back numbers of years, Yasser Arafat and Shimon Peres and Yitzhak Rabin won the award, Nelson Mandela, Gorbachev won 1 year. It's also surprising to look and see that there are some years that the award isn't awarded, that the prize is put aside for a year. I don't know whether that's because they couldn't find a noteworthy candidate for the award or for some other reason. There are different organizations that have won. There are different people in all kinds of backgrounds. I look especially at last year's winner, Mohamed Yunus. The great work that he's doing, making the lives of the community better in his projects. What has Al Gore done to make people's lives better besides make a movie?
It's not just him who's won it, though, of course.
It
is the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change.
Yes.
And this panel is apparently being praised for its ability to forge a global consensus on, shall we say, one of the most debated issues in the world, climate change. What kind of impact, in fact, on the whole issue of climate change is this award going to have?
I don't know. I don't know how much more attention the Intergovernmental Panel is going to receive because of this. Yes, there will be media attention now within the next few days, in the next few weeks, and whatever it might be following the when the award is actually presented. But I'm just wondering, are we to the saturation point right now with the whole issue? And that's not saying that I don't agree with it, but we're being bombarded with it every day, it seems, and this just seems to be another brick in the wall.
Do you think, though, that in any way there is some kind of ethical thread running through this award, despite, as you say, some of the surprising elements of it?
Yes. The committee must have seen that this is an important issue. It's important enough to give the award to the IPCC and to Mr. Gore. They see that the whole issue of climate change is something that has to be addressed. Whether you agree or disagree with the work of the IPCC and the reports that have come out, whether you agree with Mr. Gore and the work that he does for climate change and building awareness, that's one argument. But for me, personally, I think that there could have been a better choice. Who that would have been, I don't know. And I honestly don't even know who the other candidates, who else is being considered, whether or not there's a group of people or whatever it might be that that these were chosen from. I don't know how the system works, but I just think with so many other things going on in the world right now, that they could have found a better choice for the award.
Coming back to the choice of Al Gore, of course, there's the U.S. presidential race coming up. Could that also be seen in some way as trying to influence that, although he's not directly a candidate? He was, after all, former vice president.
I don't think that has a bearing on it. It just happens that it comes out now. We're a whole year from the election in the United States. I don't think that anyone had that kind of a motive, and I don't think that this is going to be something that would, if he would choose to run or if it would become more political than it is, that would have a great deal of influence. He won the Academy Award for the documentary this last spring, and so the notoriety just keeps building.
Monsignor James Reinert is an official at the Pontifical Council for Justice and Peace. Speaking at the United Nations last September, Gore urged countries to fight environmental pollution and poverty at the same time. In this next story, we see how the environment and our health can be so greatly affected by poverty. Monsignor Renato Kitsito has been taking homeless children off the streets of Nairobi for about 2 decades now. The Italian Comboni missionary and his group of lay helpers have saved dozens of street kids left orphaned from HIV/AIDS, giving them a new home, teaching them skills, and later helping them to find jobs. Many of the kids he plucks off the street come from Nairobi's slums, close to the notorious Dandora waste dump. A recent international study blamed the toxic waste there for increasing rates of disease among the population, with particularly devastating effects on children.
The majority of the children are affected by this because Nairobi, not only there is the Dandora dump, the problem, I believe, I don't know if there are reliable statistics, but it's one of the most polluted cities in the world because garbage is everywhere, because the the engine of the cars are not checked and they are polluting the air terribly. It is a bad experience to be caught in a traffic jam in Nairobi. So even that is quite a serious problem. And this is aggravated generally by poverty. I think really the root of every problem is the extreme poverty of about 70% of the people of Nairobi. That is the root cause of everything. And then poverty is creating all this problem of inability to dispose properly of the garbage, lack of infrastructure, the problem of traffic, and then the problem of desperation. Some of the children, they resort to anything to forget the situation they are living in. So there is sniffing of glue. Recently, I don't know how it happens, a lot of children have taken the habit of sniffing the fuel of the plane, the jet fuel.
How do they even have access to it?
That is a big question mark also for me. I mean, there are people that are smuggling this out of the airports.
Goodness.
And with the efforts are terrible, you see. They use it because they are not even pleasant. From what I can see, they use it when they are hungry in the evening, they have not eaten all the day, and they sniff this stuff, or they drink this stuff, and they pass out. After 5 minutes, they are sleeping up to the following morning.
So they forget they're hungry.
And they forget that they are hungry. So the root cause here is poverty, simply poverty.
Well, what's the answer?
Now, Kenya is little by little recovering. You know, a few years ago, Kenya was having a negative growth. Now there is an annual growth of the economy in Kenya of 6, even 7%. And we start seeing the results. Up to now, unfortunately, I believe much of this growth has been absorbed by those who were already rich. But it starts trickling down to the general population, and we see some improvement. We see it's becoming easier for the youngster to find a job if they have good qualification and so on. But still, there is a lot to be done. We have to look at the causes of this. There is certainly a responsibility of the local political class, but there is certainly a responsibility also of the economic system, or what the Pope used to call the structural injustices in the world. So, for instance, Kenya is one of the main producers and exporters to Europe nowadays of something that is very beautiful and very nice, flowers. But the flowers from Kenya are enriching the European companies, but the workers in the flower plantations in Kenya are maybe worse than slaves, because when they get sick, they are just kicked out.
Monsignor Kidzito doesn't want any more Kenyans to get kicked out for an illness and is calling for the ethical treatment of workers across Africa. He suggests that European companies in the sector ensure that their African suppliers treat their employees fairly. Well, despite the failures and even the political challenges he faces every day, Monsignor Kidzito lights up when he talks about his kids and says they are his true reward. His is the best job on earth.
I try to tell people how happy I am in this life I've chosen. I think I have a lot of positive response from young people. Young people are extremely interested. Just these days, I was almost every morning talking to students from these different secondary school, upper secondary schools in Italy. And I mean, they were listening for 1 hour, 2 hours, with great attention. And the general comment is, but nobody told us this before. We didn't know, you know, I was speaking with them about the life of the street children in Nairobi. I was speaking with them about the situation in the Nuba Mountains in Sudan, where we also have some activities. And, you know, you see that the youth are interested. I think that somehow our society here has given up on the youth. The problem are not the young people. The problem are their fathers and mothers, the generation that now has 40, 50, 60 years, that has given up. They don't think that their children can do something great, can do something good. They just have not communicated ideas and values to their children. But when you take this youth and you speak to them about something beautiful, something great, something that is worthwhile to dedicate their life for, you find that they give great attention. But obviously, one meeting or is not enough. It's all a matter of life education. We see this with our street children in Kenya, and I think that's everywhere the same. I mean, the youth need to receive a constantly good formation over a long time in order to be able to make positive choice for their life.
Gomboni missionary, Monsignor Renato Kizito from Nairobi, Kenya. The small Christian community in the Holy Land is still reeling from the first murder of a Christian man by suspected Islamic extremists. 32-year-old Rami Kader Ayad ran a Baptist bookshop in Gaza, the territory's only Christian bookstore. He had received repeated death threats before he was kidnapped last Saturday. He was found stabbed to death last Sunday. His murder follows a bombing in April that badly damaged the Palestinian Bible Society building. Father Manuel Musallam of the Holy Family Catholic Parish in Gaza notes that Christians and Muslims have traditionally shared good relations in the Holy Land. But now Father Musallam is worried. He says the failed economy, hunger, unemployment, war, lack of electricity and medicine in Gaza are just fodder to feed fanaticism among Gaza's 1.3 million inhabitants. Just 3,000 of them are Christian. Christians, he says, are praying that Ayad's murder isn't just the beginning of a wave of animosity towards their community.
Gaza is suffering. Gaza now is under blockus, under hunger, under fear, under... You see, this stress we are living in Gaza, all that is accaparated in our hearts inside. Now, we received another shock, the murder of one of the parish. Here in Gaza, the Palestinians are special Christians. This man is Orthodox and baptized in the Orthodox Church. He has been married in the Catholic Church. But he is practicing in Baptist Church, and when he died, he returned back to the Orthodox Church, and he has been buried in the Orthodox Church.
Father, are people in your parish afraid that this might extend to hurting Catholics or other Christians?
Here, Muslims don't distinguish between Catholics, Orthodox, and for them, all we are Christians. We must mention that it is the first murder in the first crime, let us say, which happens in Gaza and in Palestine, to find a Christian killed because he is Christian or because he is practicing something. It is not clear for us that he has been murdered because he is Christian. You say perhaps this church, this Baptist church, these persons are practicing mission. They are preaching the gospel in the Muslim territories, Muslim sites, Muslim families, trying to convert some Muslims to Christianity. With this this fact, this stand is not considered by Muslims. They are against that. And perhaps this one was the victim of this behavior of this church. But in general, what happened, a Christian was killed. Now, this situation is giving Christians in the area some fear.
Israeli Franciscan Father David Yeager defends the right of Protestants to run a Christian bookstore in Gaza, where the majority of inhabitants are Muslim. Father Yeager says that just because some Christians proselytize more visibly than others, that's no reason to kill them.
Does this event mean that Christians in the Gaza Strip are all in imminent danger? Not necessarily.
Father Yeager says Christians were relieved by the reaction of the Muslim authorities in Gaza, who strongly condemned the attack.
The Hamas movement and its ministries have strongly condemned the killing and have promised to bring the assassins to justice. However, it is not at all clear to what extent even Hamas is able to control all the many and different armed and extremist factions in the Gaza Strip. And so we have to assume that the tiny community of Christians in the Gaza Strip cannot feel secure. On the whole, security will come to Christians in the Holy Land only following a Palestinian-Israeli peace treaty, which will secure two secular democracies, Israel and Palestine living side by side.
When I talked to Father Emmanuel, he said he had just received a visit from a delegation from Hamas, who came to give their condolences and to express encouragement to the Christian community. Their meeting also had another purpose. They were checking progress of restoration to the Rosary Sisters convent and school, which got caught in the crossfire when clashes between Fatah and Hamas gunmen erupted back in June.
They paid everything for repairing the house. Also, when this man has been kidnapped, you see, I entered in contact with the Muslims, with Hamas, with the Tanfidiyya, with all the Muslims. They are our friends. I know them very well. And with the police also. They have their children here in our school, so I know them very well, these leaders. And they helped me. They tried to help to find this man during the whole night, but they kidnapped him in the afternoon, and they killed him in the early morning. For sure, we are afraid. We are afraid. We must say that. But we have also from the part of our Muslims here in Gaza, and especially encouragement. They are looking for us to find, with us to find this criminal. They came to the house to present their condolences. They called me several times on the telephone. They contact us, they speak to us, they encourage us. But you see, we cannot pass over this fact. A Christian has been killed, and because we don't know why he has been killed, we feel that it is a question of proselytism, something like this, and it is difficult for us.
So you say that you have been getting some encouragement from the Muslim community. What are the police saying? What are they trying to do to try to capture this the person responsible?
First, the police, the high officer of the police, he has his children here in our school. I know him very well, and also I invited him several times during Ramadan to eat with us, you see. So we know him very well. they took all their possibility during the night, not only the police, but also Hamas itself. They sent their soldiers all over the strip of Gaza to find this man. And they were following the whole night with me. You see, the whole night they were calling me. They used to say, we are following here and they're trying to catch him. Then the prime minister of Hamas, he ordered this day to open an official investigation to find this man. And they came to the house of the dead man to present their condolences, and they spoke with me because they consider me as the priest, who said, the person who represents the whole Christians in Gaza. They encouraged me, they assured me even today that they will do all their best to catch these persons who are trying to put a certain misunderstanding between Christians and Muslims. And these Muslims are hidden persons. They work in the obscurity. They are not official persons, but persons who are fanatics, very fanatics. And because they came several times and they attacked this library of the Baptist Church. They attacked it several times, and even this man, they spoke with him several times. They told him not to do that, not to contact Muslims, not to call Muslims, not to baptize Muslims. They called him several times. You see, they attacked also their place with bombs, with small explosions like this, several times.
Father, yes. Are you aware of any other threats made against any other Christian organizations or facilities?
What can I say? You see, here in Gaza, we are under the supervision of the providence. God is protecting us. We must expect everything. But we are Christians. We are believing in God. And we hope that these things will pass. We will not succumb to this. We will not give up. As Christians, we are giving them a hope that this is a transitive period, and we encourage them. But who knows, you see? Who knows?
As a Christian of the Holy Land, I feel, first of all, that it is a sign of the vitality of the Christian community in the Holy Land, bearing witness to Christ and recalling the ancient saying of persecuted Christians, the blood of the martyrs is the seed of Christians. May it be so in our days too. On an ecumenical level, note that this victim, this martyred Christian, is an evangelical Christian, a Baptist. And therefore, and thereby, we are reminded that what unites us all, faith in Christ Jesus, the Savior of humankind, is infinitely more important than any confessional or denominational divergences between us.
Israeli Franciscan Father David Yeager. And earlier you heard Father Manuel Musalem. He is the parish priest of the Holy Family Catholic Parish in Gaza. And that brings today's program to an end. But before I leave you, this programming note for our Rome listeners. Starting October 28th, this program will no longer be broadcast on 105 FM. But you can still catch it on the same days and at the same times on 93.3 FM. And I'm Tracy McClure, thanking you for joining us today. Bye-bye.
Laudator Jesus Christus.